The lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga. Just minutes from the track. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime, with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday, Alabama Day. Another gorgeous day up here in Saratoga. So if you're coming to the track, you're in for a really nice day. Nice card, Alabama, some other nice stakes, and we'll talk about much of that on the show this morning. Coming up in a few, Richard Migliori will join us. We'll talk a little bit about his impressions of the meet so far and more. A little bit later on, Phil Bauer, who is having a phenomenal meet. Limited starters, but 4 for 7 so far, so pretty good. And he has a horse in the Alabama later. And then we'll also be joined by Matt Hagerty, covers hard news for the Daily Racing Forum. And typically we have him on about this time of year because he comes to town every summer to cover the Jockey Club Roundtable and the Racing and Gaming Conference. So we'll touch on those topics a little bit later on. But happy to be joined top of the show by trainer Michelle Lovell, who had the nice win last week in the Saratoga Special. And we'll talk about that and more. Has a horse in this afternoon. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning.
We Steve Bick, who co-hosts with me on Sunday. We tried to get you last week, but you were headed out of town. And you, this time of year, you're based down in Colonial, right?
I am, yes. The last 2 years, we've based in a Colonial for the summer.
Colonial. Talk a little bit about Colonial racing in the summertime.
Last year was our first year. We were kind of forced to make a decision to leave Churchill because I'm based at Churchill every year. And I have a lot of grass horses, so it made sense. The purses were really good from top to bottom. And I was pleasantly surprised. It was a beautiful facility. The track is maintained really well, and the turf courses are, you know, beautiful. They're really great. So it's been a great experience for us.
And I say it constantly when I bring trainers back here. During the summer meet, we get folks who are maybe new to the game, even folks who have been in the game for a while. I love to have trainers back here and just kind of be able to introduce them to people so that you look at the name in the program, you know, a little bit more about the person. And one of the questions I always ask, how'd you get into the game?
Oh, well, I got into the game just for the love of horses from just a small child. And the first job I had was working with thoroughbreds at Dogwood Farm. And it could have been any discipline. It just happened to be thoroughbreds, and off I went.
And yeah. From reading some bio material, that was down in Georgia with, you know, Todd Campbell.
Yes.
And you don't necessarily think of Georgia as really the place you're going to launch a thoroughbred career.
No, I think at the time, it was a beautiful farm, actually, and they really wanted to get racing in Georgia, and then they tried for Pari-Mutuel in Alabama.
Yeah.
And when it didn't work out, I believe that's when he moved the stable to Aiken, I believe. I never got to go to that track.
And so you started as nobody in your family horse racing related?
Nobody, no, yeah. Still not. And they follow just the highlights that I send them. So it's fun for them, but no, they don't follow.
And then from, you know, kind of going in, reading the bio material, you started out as a jockey. And from what I read, leading apprentice at Gulfstream.
Yeah, so I started out just working with them, and I finally, probably 7 or 8 years into my little training or my horse career, I ended up at the track galloping and then became a jockey and was that for, you know, a few years. It was an excellent time in racing still. And I rode with a lot of now Hall of Famers. So, yeah, Gulfstream was, they didn't make a big deal about it. I won 19 races on that winter meet. And that's when Gulfstream was like Gulfstream.
Yeah,
it was amazing, yeah.
That's all right for an apprentice.
Yeah.
So then you transitioned over into the training career, and I noted also you work with our friend Joe Christofek and Brilliant Racing.
Oh, yeah.
There are some local guys who are involved in some of their horses. They got to be fun to work with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Joe's awesome. The Brilliant, the little team that they put together, have got several different little syndicates, I guess you could call it, but a lot of fun. They're bringing a lot of newbies in the game, which is great. They're super honest. You know, they don't make money on it. They're just really, really trying to help racing and get people involved.
Yeah, as they say, they have some locals involved, and it's been fun to watch some of their horses race. I always like to tout when the horses are involved with locals and root for those. So when was your first trip up to Saratoga? Because from what I read, you rode up here at one point.
I did. I was fortunate enough that I was riding at Gulfstream, and I won a race against Julie Crone, and we were not friends. We were just jockeys in the room, you know. And at the end of that Gulfstream meet, she said, you know, you really should try your hand, because I stayed in South Florida. She said, you really should try your hand up north. I think you'd do well. There's a lot of tracks to choose from. You can rent a room from me. And I did. It was the greatest summer of my life. I'll never forget it, 1993. And she won the Belmont on Colonial Affair, so it was just great. And I did. I got to ride maybe 5 races at Saratoga, had 3 seconds, and it felt like wins. It was great. It was a great experience.
Was that your first visit up here, and what were your impressions?
My first visit here actually was a few years ago, just to be a fan and visit with some friends. This time as a trainer, it was spectacular.
Yeah,
it was great.
Let's go back to that, because I pulled up the replay from last week, and it's an incredible story.
Yeah.
First Saratoga starter, you pick up a grade 2 win in the Saratoga Special. Damon's Mound going up against the highly touted Gulfport. Damon's Mound will be the number 2 horse. Gulfport is the number 4 horse. You get it done. Gabe Saez in for the ride. And just talk about, as they're coming down the stretch, and then the subsequent feelings, as I say, first Saratoga starter and you win a stakes race. What did it feel like last week?
You know, it felt really good. I felt very positive coming into the race. I thought that we could win the race. I knew that we were running against a very talented colt that had already proven to have won a stake. But I really thought that it would be a dogfight down the stretch, honestly. And had he not got bothered, I think it would have been more of a race on the end, honestly. But I still think we would have been a winner. I mean, I love my horse, and I thought he did really well, and he came out of it great. So I'm super excited for his future.
Yeah, an 86 buyer, solid number coming out of it, now 2 for 2. Broke the maiden in the career debut on July 2nd. Did you come into it by 12 lengths? Did you come into that with high expectations? Did you have a good feeling about what you had in that debut effort?
Sure, yeah. We you know, honestly loved the horse from the get-go. I mean, the farms in them, they loved them. You know, we can only ask him to do so much in the morning, so we didn't really know that how good he could be, honestly, because, I mean, asking him to do what he did in the afternoon would have been ridiculous, right? So he just did everything perfectly, and I thought I was leading up a horse that was a potential winner. He wowed us from the way he did it, because he did it just as easily as he did it everything in the morning. So.
Had to be special for the owners, too. It's a homebred.
Yes, it's a homebred. They've been doing it for a long time, and it's super exciting for them.
When you came out of that debut effort, was the Saratoga Special the game plan coming out of that?
Yes. As soon as we figured out that he wasn't for sale, that's
which I'm sure after a race like that, the phone was ringing.
It was crazy, yeah. It was tiring, and it was, you know, exciting for everybody to know that, you know, they thought so much of the horse that we knew we had something special anyway, and it just got backed up by the ridiculous calls that we got. And but as soon as the you know, we knew that he was staying in the barn and the loves were gonna keep him and race him, the Saratoga Special was the race that we chose.
So what happened right after that race? I mean, how soon? I'm assuming you went back.
To Colonial, right. We're still at Colonial. We're going to finish up the meet there and then get right to Churchill. He spent the night here, spent the next day, and left the next night and got into Colonial on Monday morning. And, he's been to the track. He's jogged. He's been great.
And what's the game plan? From what I've read, you're not going to come back for the hopeful, but what are you looking at?
No, I mean, the hopeful was definitely on the radar, you know, depending on how he stretched out in the the 6.5 furlongs, but I think that number one, he's a two-year-old. He's big and a very mature animal, but it would be too quick back for in our mind, and so that was off pretty quick. We decided that we want to stretch him around two turns, and we have two choices at home, and that's at Churchill or Keeneland. So
yeah, to me that both of the fall meets down at Churchill are very salty for the two-year-olds. And if you come out of there with a nice two-year-old, I think you have a nice three-year-old potentially
sure.
for the next year.
Right.
Yeah, it seems like those meets
are... And that's what we want. The owner really wants them to stick around for a while. We want to do everything right by the horse.
Yeah, and so it's going to be very interesting to see Damon's Mound next time out, now 2-for-2 with two very nice wins, including the Saratoga win. And again, what was Saturday night like?
After the Saratoga special? It was great. It was just like walking around on a cloud, and just hung out at the barn. Spent a lot of time with the owners on the phone. Hours later, because it was such a busy day, and just got a nice dinner, went to sleep, and headed out in the morning.
Very good. And you're back in this weekend because you have one in this afternoon in the Smart and Fancy, and we're going to take a look at the last race from Change of Control. We're going back to the Andy Guest Stakes down at Colonial Downs. Change of Control is going to be the number 8 horse in here. So it comes out of a nice win in the Smart and Fancy. We said it on the Handicappers Report earlier. Boy, this is just a salty, very competitive field. I think the horse coming out of this event is very playable in here. Talk about this race. How did Change of Control come out, and how is Change of Control coming into the race this afternoon?
Yeah, that was a really good win for her. She deserved to get in the winner's circle again. She brings her A game every time we send her off. She'll go run and does her job. She is just a beautiful animal. She's a beautiful horse. Loves to race, loves her job. And she went into that race really good, and she came out of it awesome. She's up here for the last couple of days just taking in the sights, and she's just a pro, and I'm looking forward to it. It's a salty race, but I think she's got a great chance.
And last week you brought Gabe Saez in. This week you're bringing the Jack that was on board there as well. What's the game plan? What's the thought process there? Just, hey, we've got a Jack who fits with the horse. Let's go with what's working.
Yeah, I'm honestly, Colby, he rides her so well. He's been everywhere with her. We had a race that we couldn't send him because of COVID, and I think we could have won it had he been on her just a little
yeah,
bit,
yeah.
You know, how he rides her. I think today, we'll just have to see how the race plays out. Obviously, it looks like there's some speed in there, maybe a little bit more speed to kind of soften it up up front. Our filly can rally from behind. She can get, lay close. So it just depends on the trip. When, we have to break from the gates and see where, she places herself. But Colby knows her really well. He knows what he's sitting on. So we're just hoping for a good, safe trip.
Well, Michelle, I'm thrilled that you were able to get some time to come back here. As I say, Steve, Vic, and I co-host on Sundays. We were trying to get you last week after the big win, but I'm glad you were back today with Change of Control so we could get you and talk a little bit about last week, which was phenomenal. Those are the kind of fun stories in the game. Also, Saturday morning means you get a gift card to Jacob and Anthony's
Yay!
Downtown if you like a little dinner.
Awesome.
Before you leave town.
Good.
Have dinner on us.
Thank
downtown
you.
At Jacob and Anthony's. Again, congratulations last week. Good luck this afternoon. And going forward as well, back down to Colonial.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
Appreciate it. Michelle Lovell. All right, we'll take a break. Richard Migliori is in the house. We'll talk to Rich in just a moment. Stay tuned.
For 4 generations and looking forward to a 5th, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Scott Bartley, and I'm here at the West Condominiums in Saratoga Springs. And guess what? We are down to the home stretch. Everything is two bedrooms and two baths. Come make a selection of one of the greatest condos ever to be built in Saratoga Springs. We're starting in the upper fives and the only rooftop penthouse available now under construction. Wow, just look at this patio. We have a rooftop pool, heated garage, balconies, and a gym. Call me at 518-281-6808.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. Happy to be joined now, as we said before the break, our friend Rich Migliore. Rich, good morning.
Good morning. Beautiful morning. I've been out since very early. My T-shirt, my jeans. I live 100 yards from the paddock, so my routine is to get up with my cup of coffee and come wander the backstretch.
Gotta love that. And you and I were talking just before we went on the air. Not only do you wander the backstretch for the TRF, you've been doing the backstretch tours. And I will say, early in the meet, I had one of the host of the HHH podcast on Kravitz, yep. And he had won the tour, I guess maybe last year, but came to the track and then took the tour, and he came on and gave raves. So the backstretch tour has been very popular with Richard Migliore.
And it's been a lot of fun. I enjoy the history of racing in general, but this place in particular. And then I sprinkle in a little bit of my personal history. I show them the room that I stayed in the two summers that I lived on the backstretch here. My boss had the Old Meadow Stable Barn, Steve DeMauro. And, of course, Clare Court, which right behind us with Four Star Dave and Quick Call, Moore Jane, yeah. Afanow. There's no place like Saratoga.
Yeah, and again, that benefits the TRF. And I will also tout, because Kim Weir from the TRF was here, and they have their big event, the barbecue, coming up. And you have a silent auction item. I'll let you talk about that in a second. And Kim said it's sold out. But if the silent auction sounds interesting to you, I'm told you can bid by proxy if somebody you know is going to the barbecue. But this is, looking at your Twitter feed, I'm envious to whoever the winner is. Talk a little bit about the silent auction item.
Well, we figured we'd try to kind of ramp it up a little from just backstretch tours. And I'm a really good cook. I mean, I know that's probably sounded pretty conceited. I'm a really good cook.
Like I say, looking at your Twitter feed, I'm buying into it.
Well, thank you. You know, my grandfather was a chef. I grew up in a restaurant kitchen, learning things, I think kind of just through osmosis, not so much that I was that interested as a youngster. Obviously starved for nearly 30 years as a jockey, but I'm making up for lost time, and I enjoy going home, preparing meals. So I offered up that if anybody wants to bid on it and they're interested, I will cook dinner for up to 8 people. I don't want to overextend myself and not be able to get something right for 10 or 12 and then feel bad about it. I have several recipes that I feel very, very confident in, and I would love to cook for people. There's nothing better than sharing a meal with people and a shared passion and a love of racing. And obviously, they're bidding on it. They love racing, so the conversation will be terrific. We'll see if we can get somebody to donate some really good wines to go along with what I hope is good food.
Very good. So, again, that'll be a silent auction item at the TRF barbecue that's coming up, which, again, is sold out. But if you know somebody's going, I'm told you can bid by proxy on that as well. Should be a very popular item. We talked with Michelle Lovell when she was here about her. She came to the track as a jockey when she was still riding, and we've talked to you before, but for people who maybe didn't see those previous, you were up here as a kid, right?
Yeah, I came here the first summer. I actually took a horseman up the day the Travers morning. I had the day off after the Travers. I had gotten left behind with the second string of horses. I was 14. I took a van up, got here about the fifth race to see Affirmed in Aladar as Travers and watched it from the 3/8 pole, and that was phenomenal. Then the next summer, I got to come up for the entire summer. It's just a magical place that I've been blessed to come here most of my life. I missed one summer riding at Del Mar, which was nice to experience, but there's no place like Saratoga.
Yeah. And I say it all the time. The races are great and the facility is great, but the town is just so much fun with people who are so into racing.
The people. That's what makes it. I mean, yes, the atmosphere and the setting is spectacular. But that I can walk down the street and run into somebody and we start talking about racing in the past or something that's coming up, and the enthusiasm, there are no better fans in the world than the Saratoga fans.
And you know, the stories make it too, and Michelle Lovell is one of those stories. How much fun is that? Where that's my first Saratoga start. Yeah, I'll come up and win a stakes race.
Well, and her horse, Damon's Mound, is a throwback kind of horse, and I'm so happy I got the opportunity to say to her, he's the kind of horse that made me fall in love with the game in the 70s. You know, we were blessed in the 70s with horses like, obviously, Secretariat and Forgo and Ruffian and Seattle Slough and on and on and on. Affirmed was one of my all-time favorites. This horse reminds me. Every horse, a good horse, has ability. But the thing that differentiates them is their mental capacity to process things. And you can see this horse thinking his way through a race. He's laying third and behind horses in the Saratoga Special with his head bowed and waiting for the rider. Like, all right, can I go now? He's just an intelligent individual with a world of physical ability.
Obviously a longtime jockey. Did I hear right? Somebody a week and a half ago, I said you were on some horses in the morning?
I did get on a horse, and I did go in the starting gate. We shot a feature that we're going to air hopefully this week. We got an incredible Cracker Jack crew of editors and cameramen and people that made this happen. And I'm really excited about it. What I wanted to do, my idea was to bring people into the starting gate.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I don't know that people know exactly what jockeys are doing in there and how they get a horse squared up and balanced on their feet to leave their running and the communication between the rider, the assistant, the starter. And in the magic of TV and the editing, it'll look like I broke from the gate. I did not break from the gate. We edited it where someone else left with the GoPro, but I actually did get on a horse and felt like a little kid. I was giddy. It was a John Kimmel horse. We backed him out of the gate, and I wanted to gallop him around, and Loretta Lustig, who I've known since I'm a kid galloping horses at Penmore Farm, was like, no, that's not happening. So I did not gallop a horse, but I did sit on one.
Very good, very good. And I'm looking forward to that feature. I had Barbara Livingston here the other day, who has the great exhibit across the street of the old photograph collection that she had. And there are more online, and I looked online. And the first GoPro, I guess, so there's one online, it has to be like 30 years old. He's got like an actual film camera on a motorcycle helmet. I thought, there it is, a GoPro 1.0 back in the day. I probably had to weigh 50 pounds.
It's a phenomenal exhibit. I came up during the winter last year, and we shot a feature about Barbara. And
I saw that. That was a nice piece.
The Raftery collection. I have a personal Jim Raftery story. I was an apprentice, riding night and day, getting on horses in the morning. Half the time I didn't know what day it was. And I'd won a race at the Meadowlands, and they had taken some pictures, and like another group was coming in, and I just being overtired and cranky, and I jumped off the horse before they were done taking pictures and was undoing my girth. And Mr. Raftery got a photo of me off the horse undoing my tack. And the next night, and I didn't even think anything of it, and the next night before the first race at the Meadowlands, he came to the jockey's room and said, I need to speak with you. And he basically kindly, in a firm but nice way, explained how important those photos were to people that won the race. And I felt terrible, and I couldn't have been more apologetic. But he basically taught me a lesson, like, you got to be more mindful of just what you're going through in that moment and how important those other things are to other people.
Yeah, and Barbara related a story that I read before I had her on of, she was with her then boyfriend, and they were taking pictures of photos, and they weren't dressed to the nines back in the day, and
right.
he kind of gave them a little bit. So he sounded like an interesting guy, and again,
true gentleman,
across the street. Rich wanted to bring you in to talk a little bit about what we've seen so far at the meet. We've kind of alluded to the Fox show, and again, whenever I get anybody in here, who participates, I you know, applaud. And I had a television production company in town for years. Now I'm on this side of the camera. I know how tough it is. You have a great crew who does a great job. And I've said it now for a few years. Doesn't just benefit New York racing. I think it benefits racing as a whole by promoting the product.
Well, thank you. And you know, if that's reaching people, that's more satisfying to me than anything else. Love the game. Horses and the game have given me everything in my life and everything good in my life. So hopefully we're giving back and promoting the game in a way that everybody can be proud of. And you said it, though. Our production team, behind the scenes, the people that don't get the camera time and the accolades that they should, we have a fabulous team.
Yeah, no question about it. Again, I've done it for years, and I know what goes into that. You guys do a great job. Let's hit on some of the highlights of the meet and get your impressions now that we're, two-thirds of the way through. And I wanted to go back because the highlight of the meet is obviously the Travers. Maybe tie in some three-year-old thoughts here, but I wanted to go back and watch the stretch run to the Jim Dandy. I thought Epicenter looked very good that day, Zandon second. Tawny Port third. So Epicenter, I think, comes into the Travers very well. I'm totally intrigued to see what Charge It does in the Travers. But talk a little bit about what we saw from Epicenter and your kind of thoughts on the three-year-olds as we approach the Travers.
Well, it feels to me like, you know, off of this Jim Dandy, Epicenter has kind of shown that at this moment, now obviously we've got the Travers and he's the divisional leader. I think he was unlucky through the Triple Crown. He's a horse that's not showing the same gait speed he once did, so his trips are a bit different. But the way he finished with a slow pace, and one of the gifts of Joel Rosario is making as little use of a horse as possible. Now, the Jim Dandy, a very important race in its own right, still a prep for the Travers, and I think that was the perfect prep, you know, to finish the last 3/16 of a mile, never feel the crop, never be overused. That's a race that a horse builds on. He's going to be very, very tough in the Travers.
Yeah, looking forward to the Travers in a week. Can you believe that? Wanted to go back to last weekend because I think two of the better performances from the meet were last weekend. We're going to take a look at the four-star day. Always fun to root for Lee Einsiedler. And I kicked myself because when I handicapped, I couldn't get past Regal Glory. But I have liked Casa Creed so many times before. And at 4-1, after the race, I felt like, man, I left one on the table. But we see in the Lee Einsiedler pink colors, this was some performance from Casa Creed.
Really was. And what makes a good turf horse? It's acceleration. It's a turn of foot. The ability to quicken. And that was on full display with Casa Creed. I mean, he really leveled off and finished that race. And even when he hit the front, lost a little focus, jumped back to his left lead because, like, oh, I took them, my job's over. I feel the same as you. I kind of got a little blinded with Regal Glory. And her trip wasn't ideal. Her run was kind of stretched out because she got a little more involved early and then had to make that kind of steady three-wide advance where Casa Creed set in behind her. And that's the key to turf racing. Finding live cover, being able to save ground and come out for daylight when you want to make your last kick. But to have a horse with that kind of acceleration and turn of foot. And I think this is a clear example of how horses change with maturity.
Yeah.
You know, I think he was more effective at shorter distances when he was younger. But now, as a six-year-old, horses don't fully develop till they're five. He's shown, I think he's a true miler at this point, and that was a tremendous performance. And Lee's very easy to root for. Extremely generous with so many causes.
Yeah, absolutely. Next day, you know, you talk about acceleration and a turn of foot. The three-year-old Big Invasion in the Mahoney. Boy, it's some meet also for Dean Reeves. Earlier this week, Dakota Gold looked good. But again, going back to the Mahoney last week, Big Invasion was also phenomenal, I thought.
Well, and the other thing we talk about with good horses, they all possess speed. It's how they use their speed. Earlier in his career, Big Invasion was a little bit keener, a little bit more headstrong, wanted to be up in the fray. He's really learned to switch it off and turn it on late. And I think, you know, obviously the Camants and Joel Rosario, nobody better at that, getting a horse to melt into your hands and make that one run. And he's got an uncanny knack of timing his runs. I mean, this is a superior talent. This is a really good horse. I'll be curious to see him going forward, how far eventually he'll go, because I do think he'll wind up becoming a horse that can get a mile.
Yeah, so far so good with, yeah. Boy, he has just been phenomenal. It's going to be interesting to see how they play out the year, too, and do they go on to the Breeders' Cup and whatnot. But, again, some big performance just from the recent weekends. I think it's been a phenomenal meet so far. Before we let you go, thoughts on today's Alabama? We'll show the stretch run to the coaching club, American Oaks, where Ness looked great. But your thoughts this afternoon on the Alabama?
Well, I mean, Ness is taking her game to a different level. And hearing Todd Pletcher's quotes about how she flourished after the Belmont, running a mile and a half against the boys, and, you know, had some trouble. The stumble, had a, you know, pause. I don't think she was going to beat Mo Donegal, but would have been a lot closer. The fact that she flourished out of that speaks to her physical constitution and that she thrived on that. Now, this was a breakout performance, incredible. Now, Secret Oath wasn't going to beat her under any circumstances this day, and I have a hard time seeing anybody beat her in the Alabama. That being said, Secret Oath has trained much better into the Alabama than she did the coaching club. In her workouts up to the coaching club, she was trying to drift out, actually bear out. Her gallop out wasn't strong, wasn't enthusiastic. She's been straight as a string. She's been galloping out impressively. I think you'll see the best of Secret Oath today. Now, does that close a 12-length gap? I don't see it, but she's going to run, a much better race.
Yeah, we had Wayne Lucas in last week, and he was saying, I'm going to get a much better performance. So it's going to be fun to watch as they come down the stretch. And we always root for a nice battle, so we'll root for that again today. Rich, appreciate the visit. Saturday visit means... Hey, dinner on us at Jacob and Anthony, so go downtown and enjoy dinner.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate
the visit. Continued success on the Fox show, and as I say, appreciate your stopping in this morning.
That was a lot of fun anytime.
All right, Rich Migliore, we'll take a break. When we come back, Phil Bauer is in the house. We're going to put the asbestos covering over the seat because he is red hot. Stay tuned, all of that right after this.
Juvenile fillies turf, 14 of them across the track. Set on their way. And the dance on the outside, broke a little sideways from Pro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be stopped. But running on now, and Somali Lemonade's got eight to make up. They come to the top of the lane, stop shopping. Maria's got a lot left. Stop shopping. Maria goes on. Sweet Cat is right there, hard not to like. Royal Body is running on. Past the eight ball, they come, stop shopping. Maria for the run, still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late. Yes, Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, stop shopping. Maria, Stephanie's Kitten's watered.
Monster chances broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide open. It's Terra from the Cape hanging on. Terra from the Cape tries to go all the way. On the outside now, here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the chances in there too. But Flotilla has gone right on by. And Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won it just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish there.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, yeah, we put the asbestos on the chair because he is red hot. Phil Bauer, 4-for-7 so far up here at the meet. Phil, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on, Seth.
Boy, phenomenal meet. Give us your impression so far. And I'm curious, when you come up here to Saratoga, do you have a goal? And I'm assuming if you do, you probably have exceeded it so far.
I think one is the goal. You know, if you can win one up here, it's a good meet. So, obviously, extremely excited the meet that we're having. You know, good testament to the group of team members we brought up here. Everybody's been working really hard, and horses kind of falling in the right places. So very fortunate.
We talked before you sat down. You said you've been up here to the whole meet. I believe, what, three kids? Are they up here too?
They actually left 2 weeks ago. Kentucky starts school mid-August. So
yeah,
they were up here for about 3 weeks. And my wife's from about 30 minutes away. So
oh, really?
Kind of a homecoming for her. And it's nice to just kind of enjoy Saratoga for a few weeks. And then they head home and start the school thing. And
where's she from?
Kinderhook area.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. I'm from Amsterdam originally, over in the other direction. But so the kids like Saratoga?
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you don't have to twist their arm to come up. They're very willing participants and kind of grumpy when they have to leave.
But well, we all are.
Absolutely. It's a special place.
Talk about, I always ask when we get people in for the first time, how'd you get into the game?
I fell in love with it through my grandfather. He owned and bred some cheap claimers at River Downs and Turfway Park and stuff like that. So just got a love for it. And then I tell people a lot of times I was in the right place at the right time. A lot of times the family had a semi-truck parts business that I had kind of committed to working for, and they sold it. And I didn't want to sell truck parts unless it was for the family. So got a job walking hots on the backside for Steve Margolis at Churchill Downs, and then slowly kind of worked my way up the ladder. And then the most recent jump was the Rigneys offered me a private training position, and it's been a dream come true.
You talk about right place at the right time. It's kind of the sliding doors, the Gwyneth Paltrow movie from last night. I was doing some research, and it was an elevator door opened up, right, and led into your career.
Yeah, it was Mother's Day at the track, and my sister had been a nanny for Richard Klein. And the elevator's open, and he was there. And I said, hey, you know, you mentioned one time maybe you'd help me get a job on the backside. And he said, I'll make a phone call. And next thing you know, I got Steve's number, called him up, and the rest is history.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like I say, there's that Gwyneth Paltrow movie where she gets stuck outside. It's two parallel timelines, and one she gets into the subway, one she just misses it because the door is closed in time. And it shows how that one moment in time can completely change
right.
your life.
Yeah, yeah. If we would have gone to the stairs instead of the elevator or something, who knows? But you know, I'm extremely blessed to be in the position I am, and you know, very, very excited to what's to come. And we feel like, you know, Richard and I talk a lot that, you know, it took a few years for the kind of get the wheels on and get things rolling. But, you know, the team that he's constructed as far as the buyers and the breeders and all that stuff, I think everything's pointing in the right direction now. And we keep telling ourselves, you know, we feel it coming. And I think this meet maybe is a little taste of hopefully what's to come. And obviously ambitions of higher caliber races, and nice to participate in the Alabama today.
Yeah, we'll talk about that one in a second. I wanted to just kind of go through the winners and talk a little bit about them. And this was just from the other day. We're going to watch Warrior Johnny get it done in an allowance event. Very nice performance. 8.5 lengths is the chart margin here. Warrior Johnny's going to be the number 5 horse when we pull up the replay. Talk about this one the other day, because as I say, with the chart margin, boy, this is some victory.
Yeah, I mean, watching the race down the backside, I was a little grumpy that, you know, we broke well enough to sit right off the pace and down the backside. They tried to slow it down, and Junior went on with him, and when he came back to the winner's circle, he said, Phil, I told myself if I'm wrong, I'm going to be in big trouble. But he felt like he was just needing to let the horse run his race, and, you know, he's a seasoned jock. So that's what I think those guys, that they make decisions on the fly, and that's the key to winning races sometimes. And, you know, to take the pressure from the four and then kind of run into the turn and then run away from him, we were blown away. We felt like he was going to run well, but I don't think you ever think they're going to run that big. He got a pretty good number, so, you know, we're excited to probably take on some stakes company here in the future. We really haven't circled anything yet, but still kind of cooling him out. But he seemed to bounce out of it well enough, and, you know, we'll see.
I mean, I'm assuming because it was this week, probably not back at this meet.
I don't think so. You know, kind of waiting on the Churchill book to come out. That's our home base. See if something suits him there, and if not, we'll have to put him on a truck and go somewhere.
you know, you talk about the jock and having the conversation with the jock. How much is you in the paddock saying, do this, and how much, particularly up here, they put trust in, you know, with the jockey calling, they put trust in the jockey?
You know, it was nice that he was able to get on the horse a few times in the morning. So I think you kind of construct a plan during those morning workouts, and then obviously race day you touch on, hey, obviously they work a lot of horses, so hey, remember this horse, this is what kind of how he is. And the biggest thing with this horse is rhythm, and he knew that, and he felt like if he was going to set back on him, maybe would have kind of taken him out of his rhythm. So he went on with it, and the rest was history. So
And when I did a little research last night, there was a Q&A with you at Churchill, and I don't know that you will remember, but they asked you, I think, the worst excuse you ever heard from a jockey. I think
it was Corey Lannery. He rode that horse like a monkey. It's like, you really can't say anything to it. And you know, it's nice when they come back and apologize after a bad ride or whatever. It never makes you feel that much better, because so much work goes into it. But, you know, they're out there just like us. Everybody wants to win, and you know, it's nice when everything comes together.
Yeah. Let's take a look at this one's coming back on Sunday, I believe. Clayton Lionheart tomorrow?
We're still doing our rain dance. It doesn't look probable, but, you know, he'll need to.
So he's a main, main track only on Sunday, right. But yeah. Let's take a look at the win going back to August 11th. Clayton Lionheart is going to be the number six. You were in a claiming event there. But you hold on to the horse. You have to appreciate that after a win like this. If you don't get in on Sunday, is there anything else coming up?
So the two other than is running to the it ran Thursday.
Okay.
So we felt that was a little too quick to come back against that cast. Tried to find maybe an easier spot of an off the turf. We'll try the rest of the meet. And, you know, there's even a three other than that we might even just try them out of condition, just because most of those horses, it's coming off their scratching. So, I mean, he loves it here, so we're going to definitely enter any spot that we can to get him a start back. Four wins up here. That's the only place he wins. So,
yeah,
he's a neat horse.
I'm looking, yeah, he's now 7-4-2 up here. So he's definitely – and it, as a trainer, is that a fact that as handicappers, at least I do, I think there is a horse for a course angle. But a horse like him, I mean, do you look
without
at
that? Without a doubt. I mean – he's his running style, you kind of look at his pace numbers, he never really quickens. He just keeps grinding, and this track's good for those types with the sweeping turns. And, you know, a lot of horses like Churchill, they can cut the corner and get a length or two, and he just can't get there in time. And here, I mean, it looked mid-stretch. He was outrun, but yeah, he just keeps coming and coming, so you better not stop in front of him.
So we'll look for that one perhaps a little bit later on, or, as you say, if the rain dance works.
Right.
Let's also take a look going back to August 4th. Played Hard. Played Hard's going to be the number three horse here, and just gets it done as the favorite. How'd the horse come out of that race, and are we looking for anything forward for Played Hard?
Yeah, this filly's been one of our favorites for a couple of years. She always seems to bring a race, and this one in particular, the way she fought to get her nose down was, I think, hopefully a signal of the direction she's headed. I think, I'm curious to see kind of where the six goes from here. I think it's a pretty quality horse, so we're going to try Black Type. There's a couple spots where I ball in September that maybe the Locust Grove at Churchill, or there's a little overnight over there at Colonial. But I think we need to continue with confidence for this filly. And, you know, she's definitely has ability, and, you know, hopefully she continues to put a few together.
The horse you nosed out was Chad Brown and Peter Brandt. So, as you say, lightly raced, and that might be a very nice one also. Also wanted to touch on one more, one more baby. You lost this one, though, and talk a little bit about the claiming game up here at Saratoga. Dropped in for the maiden claiming tag. One More Baby, the number eight, gets it done, and really gets it done. But as I say, you lost this horse in the claiming box. And I will say the claiming box up here at Saratoga has been on fire.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about claiming races, if you enter and they come out and they look like a winner, odds are they're going to get claimed. I mean, that's, people are looking for horses that, just with the smaller crop numbers, the claiming game is as hot as it ever has been. But, you know, we felt like this horse would fit well up here, being aggressive. And, you know, he came up here, he really flourished. Back there at home, it kind of gets real hot down there in Kentucky. So he appreciated some cool nights and was eating well. And, you know, another one. You didn't expect him to run that big. But, you know, if, best of luck to the people that took him. You know, he's a – my daughter actually weeped when they claimed him. So it was you know, he's a nice little horse, so I think they'll be fine with him for the claim price. But he come here to win races, and he was in a winning spot, and we were lucky enough to get the
W. Yeah, you walk away with the person. That's the claiming game, you know.
Absolutely.
You put him in, and then maybe you win and you lose him. But and finally, before we let you go, you mentioned it earlier, you have the horse this afternoon in the Alabama. We'll take a look at that one. You're up against some monsters, but Scratch Cat, we're going to look at, comes out of a win down at Churchill Downs. Scratch Cat's going to be the number two horse. How's she coming into this afternoon's race, and what are you expecting in the Alabama?
You know, I think that the mile and a quarter will suit this filly. I mean, you can see in this replay here, she's still trying to figure the game out. She was a real green filly early on, wouldn't switch leads. So we've gotten that down pat, and it kind of, once she sticks her head in front here, she just kind of hangs, and then when she feels the three, it actually pushes her through the wire, and then on the gallop out, she continues to march forward. So she's pedigree.
Only the fifth career start.
Yeah, I mean, she's bred to go all day. Very, very ambitious spot here, but, you know, Graveyard of Champions, maybe Lightning will strike here. I mean, I think the main goal is to hit the board here. If we don't win and we run third, I think we'll be elated, because there's a lot of upside with her, and, you know, we were here, so why not?
Yeah, that's great.
You know, I think her running style, if there's any pace in front of them, they're coming back, she'll be grinding towards them, and you just hope that somebody doesn't bring their A game today, because if they do, I don't know if definitely Nest and then the Lucas's filly, I mean, maybe there was an excuse last race, and if she returns to form, it'll be tough. But
yeah, coming off a win, though. And
yeah,
again,
we're excited to try.
The way your farm is going, I'm not ignoring anything, and that's why I wanted to have you in here. It's just been a fabulous meet so far for Phil Bauer. Phil, we appreciate it. Saturday morning guest. You get dinner on us down at Jacob and Anthony's downtown, so we appreciate
you
swinging by. We congratulate you on the meet so far. Offer good luck going forward, not just at Saratoga, but when you head back down to Kentucky.
Very much appreciated.
Phil Bauer. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Matt Hegarty is in the house. Of course, covers the hard news side of things for the Daily Racing Forum. He was in town, Jockey Club Roundtable, Racing and Gaming Conference, and more after this. Stay tuned. Thank you. That was great.
That was a pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Thank
that
you
was
very
good.
Much.
Thanks. Very good.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Come on!
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by Matt Haggerty from the Daily Racing Forum. We typically have him this time of year, right after the Jockey Club Roundtable Racing and Gaming Conference. Get a little fill-in on what those industry confabs were like. Matt, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, the last couple of weeks, I had here Lisa Lazarus. I had Tom Rooney from the NTRA. They were both across the street at the Jockey Club Roundtable. Obviously, HOISA was taking a lot of attention, given the implementation being the better part of 2 months ago now, beginning of July. So we'll hit on that in a few seconds. But just give us a little overview. Jockey Club Roundtable first. What was that like last weekend?
Yeah, Jockey Club Roundtable was, as you know, is administered by the Jockey Club. Jockey Club has obviously been a big supporter of HISA. Their attorneys have played a large role in drafting the legislation that eventually got passed that created it. With the rollout that has been controversial in some circles, they obviously wanted to provide their own outlook on it. Lisa Lazarus was the keynote speaker, who spoke for about 15 minutes to take us through where they are, what they're looking forward to, what they're working on right now. Because obviously, if this rollout on July 1st was a bit chaotic and controversial, what happens on January 1st when the anti-doping and medication control program goes into effect, or is at least scheduled to go in effect, has the potential to be a lot more complicated.
What, from your perspective, covering the news side, what has the implementation been like? Because I must say, here in New York, I'm not hearing a lot of negative buzz, really. I mean, there was kind of some negative buzz going into it, and then the implementation happened, and I think an Ohio track had a disqualification that was wrongly based on the rules, so there was a little something there where people still maybe have to figure it out. It seems like some of the other jurisdictions are getting a little more pushback, but overall, what does it seem to be, the implementation in the industry, what's the buzz over the past 6 weeks?
I think if you're from the outside looking in, the industry doesn't look any different.
Yeah.
The enforcement of the WHIP rules in jurisdictions in which there was no existing WHIP rule prior to that, you've seen a lot of penalties. Those penalties, though, are decreasing as people learn the rules. But I know that as I was participating in a lot of the Zoom calls that HISA was sponsoring with different horsemen's groups, there was a lot of pushback from the rank and file on registering, on what it meant to register, what would happen after they registered, what would they be liable for, what were the rules. And then there were some snafus on the registration site. For people who had a lot of horses, a lot of help, you had to put your head down, get in front of your computer, get your paperwork in front of you. I always likened it to doing your taxes. You have to get everything in order, but then once you get into the process, it's pretty easy. So there was a tremendous amount of carping about that prior to the July 1st date. And as you mentioned, after that, after everybody had gone through the registration process, those you didn't hear the frequency of the complaining after that. So I think people got their horses registered, at least the people that that were serious about the game and have large stables. But then you have these outlying areas in which opposition to HISA is based more on a philosophical point of view than any in-depth look at what HISA is doing.
Yeah, Tom Rooney talked about, put an article up on the NTRA website, some of the myths, and he addressed some of the myths according to HISA. What's the situation in Texas?
Yeah, so Texas has taken this very unusual legal view that they are the only ones that can regulate racing in Texas, that if a federal agency were to come in and regulate any part of it, then they wouldn't be able to regulate any part of it. So they just kind of said, we're opting out, didn't give Lone Star approval to send its signal out of state. That way they would not qualify as a HISA-regulated entity. I think there's a lot of posturing going on there. Lone Star Park was only going to race until July 22nd or 23rd, I think. So they had only about 11 racing days left, and then the Thoroughbreds don't start up again until January. I know that HISA has been, trying to resolve those differences. So I don't know what's going to happen in Texas as of January. I know that if they are not sending their simulcast signal out of state, They do have now the tax rebates that they're getting from sales of horse feed and like that. That's going into the purse fund, so that is helping out with their purses, but they're still going to be facing a major problem if they are not simulcasting in 2023.
Yeah, they're clearly going to have to address that. Parse out for us, again, HISA was implemented on July. You mentioned the January 1st. Parse out for us what happened when the July implementation came under effect and what is going to happen in January. And I guess the medication rules are also, they went to the FTC recently.
The medication, the anti-doping control rules, the lab accreditations, the arbitration process, the penalties for violations, those were all sent up to the FTC on Wednesday night, I believe. There will then be a 60-day public comment period. The FTC will review those. And then send them back to HISA with their approvals, rejections, modifications. What happened on July 1st is that all the people that were participating in racing had to be registered. It was basically a different license, except this was kind of a national license. So if you looked at the rules that were there as far as how it affected licensees, you could kind of transfer the rights and responsibilities if you're licensed in Kentucky to the same thing as HISA, except that it applied to any state that you went to. So some of the rules that affected the racetracks would have been having safety officers in place, having different policies and procedures for stewards adjudications. And then obviously the one that's most visible and perhaps the only one that's visible to racing fans is the six strike limit in a horse race.
I'm not a jockey, but I could see where there'd be pushback on that because I can't imagine, my brain doesn't work that way. I'm in the heat of a race. How are they accounting? But I guess you have to have a limit for adjudication of the, but that to me was a funny rule, but I get the point of it.
And, you know, I sympathize with jockeys, especially the guys that have been riding for 20 years, 20 plus years. They've their whole careers, they've been doing it one way. If you told me tomorrow that I had to write in Cyrillic, I would have a big problem with it, right? But the world is changing, and it's leading to a way. In Europe, you see whip restrictions. In some cases, in some European countries, you see complete elimination of the whip. You know, speaking of the Jockey Club, they did have the director of racing for the Swedish Horse Racing Authority, who conducts a lot less flat racing than here in the United States. But they still do allow jockeys to carry the whip, but they can only use it to avoid a dangerous situation, pretty much the Monmouth rule, the New Jersey rule. Weirdly, New Jersey on July 1st had a less restrictive rule because the HISA rule wasn't as restrictive as the New Jersey rule. So there's going to have to be a whip restriction in racing. There just is. It gives one less weapon in the arsenal of racing's critics, and it's a powerful one. It's a very convincing one. You can tell everyone that we care really deeply about these horses, but that it doesn't jibe with then seeing a jockey apply a whip to a horse.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with the whip rule per se, but again, the count, I don't know how you can be in the heat of a battle. Five or was it six?
Yeah.
And I get, again, why there is a limit, because then you make the adjudication possible. But,
right,
but boy,
exactly.
I feel for the jockeys with that kind of situation. Anything, roundtable, anything beyond HISA notable?
I pretty much focused on the roundtable. I did. You talked with Tom Rooney. I did do a big Q&A with him right prior to the roundtable. I would recommend if anybody. It's obviously still up on the site somewhere, but it's an interesting read. I think they've got the right guy.
Me too. He was in with us.
Yeah, he was a obviously five terms in the House of Representatives, a moderate Republican who wasn't afraid to cross the aisle. Has a very good rapport with a lot of legislators still there,
and a racing and breeding background.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And as the federal government gets more and more involved in every aspect of business, it seems you need a guy like that on the Hill for you.
Yeah, and when he sat in with us, I pulled a picture from his Twitter feed where he was really happy to be over at the museum, and on one of the jockeys, not out in front of the museum, but back, it was the Shamrock Farm that his family was involved with, and he was like thrilled. So I think that is the right guy. He's got the Washington connections. He has a tie-in to the game. Let's go now to the Racing and Gaming Conference, and you wrote about that as well. And I was interested to read about, there was maybe a little bit of a push towards being more involved with, and I'm really intrigued, I haven't read comprehensive, and maybe you've written about it, maybe you can point me in the right direction, any comprehensive numbers from New Jersey yet, but fixed odds wagering, I think, is really intriguing.
Yeah, I think it's really intriguing, too, anyone who's been over to Ireland or England, especially if you're a pari-mutuel player. In Ireland, you have them both. So you can hedge, you can middle, you can do all kinds of things that you want to there when you have both options available to you. It's probably even more fun when you can do it online. We just have so much limited data here in the United States. So if you want to talk about fixed odds in the United States, a lot of people have very big plans for it. Right now, it is 8 tellers at one bank at Monmouth Park. Monmouth wants to go online with this. They want a mobile app with it. Right now, bookmakers don't have to worry about liquidity the way that a pari-mutuel pool does, but that also means they take on a lot more risk.
Yeah.
A lot of bookmakers
You have to have a very good odds maker.
And a lot of the bookmakers in highly competitive markets lay off their risk with each other.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of an iffy proposition. I'm not sure how. I haven't done any analysis of the odds that are being offered at Monmouth, but I think anyone who's a serious player will be in support of this. The only problem is it's a different revenue model. It's a different business model. Convincing people to support something that looks like it returns less from every wager to racing is kind of a hard sell. There's also big actors that want to get into it. NYRA probably does. They just bought 49% of United Tote from Churchill Downs. They obviously are going to have a partnership coming someplace down the road. So I think watching it, we're still going to have to watch it mature. I don't know of any other state other than Colorado that is ready to go forward with it. So we'll have to just keep watching what happens in New Jersey, see what happens when they can get a mobile app launched and expand it to a lot more people. And we'll see where it goes from there. I think it's a no-brainer for the racing industry to embrace it. And obviously, David O'Rourke, you've heard him talk about it. He is very excited about it, but right now, he wants to get on the platforms first. Pari-mutuel is still a better game than fixed odds. It's by far, for a serious horse player, pari-mutuel is still the best game in the world. But you do want to offer that option that looks exactly like the options that are being offered alongside on the sports betting apps. I know that that NYRA wants that penetration first. They want to get on those mobile apps and then see where that takes them.
I'd also love to see, to appeal to the sports bettors, like a horse racing parlay card with head-to-head matchups and races during the day. I think that would be a knockout of the park.
Yeah, if you hear Dallas Baker, who's head of the operation at Monmouth, talk about the different opportunities that they think they can offer once they get that liquidity and don't have to take on so much risk, it's interesting. It'll make for a fun afternoon when you're just not, you know you can handicap a card great and still not win a bet, and maybe you just need to take a break and get some head-to-head parlays
because
going.
I think you'd pull in those people who are familiar with the parlay card with football, and you have head-to-head matchups during the day. I think it pulls some new people in. But
definitely.
The racing industry now, I think, has the opportunity with the way things are going to explore some of these. And just before you go, I wanted to touch on one more. And it turned out to fizzle into a non-news story, I guess. But California with the media licensing, did that last 2 days?
Yeah, it lasted 2 days. The CHRB the conversations I had when they sent out the notice was it didn't sound like the CHRB was fully behind it. They just knew that they had read the rule, taken it literally, and said, well, I guess we have to enforce this. I don't think that they had planned for the media pushback. I do know one person at the CHRB had. That person was very wary about what they were going to do. If you look at the rules in almost every jurisdiction, they have the same language. If you are going to be in a enclosure that is...
So they were looking at rules that are in effect now, and they were just giving it kind of a different spin, a different interpretation. And for folks who don't know, CHRB was proposing that all the media that went to the racetrack was going to have to be licensed, pay for a license, which is completely different than
criminal background check. So fortunately they pulled back. They media will still have an exception to the rule like they do in every other jurisdiction, because it would have been a problem.
Yeah, it immediately kind of lit up the racing media, and then it went beyond racing media. It went just
AP,
sports media.
AP got involved.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I'm glad that was quickly put to bed. Matt, we always appreciate your stopping by. Update us on the two industry confabs. You can find more about it at drf.com. Click on Matt's articles. Does a great job, again, covering the industry meetings up here, but horse racing news throughout the year as well. Appreciate the visit. Oh, and as a Saturday guest, dinner on us at Pinnell's. So
really?
A little dinner right around the corner at Pinnell's on us.
That's
we appreciate
a lot of
the
meatballs.
Visit. Matt Hagerty from the Daily Racing Forum. All right, we will wrap things up. Don't forget today, Beat Bic. Go to NTRA. Type in Google NTRA and Beat Bic. Again, the handicapping contest, you just have to pick a couple of winners this weekend, and then you get to go in the big contest September, I think. And if you win that and go to the NHC, you get a chance for $1 million bonus, perhaps. So don't forget the Beat Bic contest, again, over at the NTRA website. Going to wrap it up. Great day up here. Sunny. It's starting to get a little warm, but hey, it's summer in Saratoga. But it's Alabama Day with some other nice stakes on the card as well. We will be back in tomorrow. Speaking of Steve Bic. Loose on the lead tomorrow at 10 a.m. 9 o'clock for the handicapper support. Great racing on the network here all afternoon, so stay tuned here or come on up to the track. Swing down to the racebook and enjoy it down there. You have plenty of options. But as far as here on the morning programming, tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. handicapper support, 10 a.m. loose on the lead. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.